to order for Health and Social Services at 1:35 my time. And we do have three members present. We have Senator Dyson and Senator Passavant, Vice Chair, myself, Betty Davis. We have two bills to come before us today. And in the order of the bills is House Bill 349, Suicide Prevention Council Meetings. And Rep. Farrakhan can't be, but she has her staff that's going to present the bill to us. You come forward, give your name and an overview of your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Crystal Keenum and staff to Representative Fairclough. Unfortunately, she has to be up in finance right now, but she does pass on her regards. What we have before us is House Bill 349, which deals with the Statewide Suicide Prevention Council. Last year, Madam Chair, I know you had carried a companion bill to House Bill 123, which reworked the membership of the council and also established a new sunset date.
Yes.
By that bill, we had turned the four legislative members into non-voting members in a hopes to establish or be able to establish a quorum better, which leaves the remaining 12 members to establish the quorum. Unfortunately, they have not been able to be able to establish a quorum very easily just because of the large state and the different public members on the council, between the counselors of the schools, children themselves on the council, commissioners, things of that nature. So what House Bill 349 does is allows the members of the Suicide Prevention Council to meet by teleconference to establish a quorum and also vote. And Madam Chair, that's the extent of the bill, and I'm here for questions or comments if need be.
All right, thank you for the overview. Is there any questions? And I also like to recognize Senator Thomas. He arrived while you were doing your presentation, and he also has a question for you.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My question is, adding the word and vote, the two words and vote, was it something that was understood they could do before but not necessarily in statute, and that's the reason for the language, or they just couldn't vote before, so you had to say that there's precluded in some other area of the statute?
Madam Chair, Senator Thomas, they never wanted to really attempt to vote by teleconference just because they were unsure of whether or not that would really hold up. So they just wanted to make sure that having the and vote language in there that they were covered. So
you might,
so it's expected that they probably could have, because I've sat on boards and commissions, you know, that were state sponsored and have voted by teleconference and never bothered to look up the statute and see if it specifically said that or not. But thank you.
Yes, Senator Dyson?
I'm always embarrassed at my ignorance. I've been recently appointed to a suicide prevention board. And is it this one?
I think so.
Madam Chair, Senator Dyson, yes, that would be this one.
Yeah, and I thought it was more specifically rural, but there's only one?
Madam Chair, there is only one statewide suicide prevention council. And it's housed within the Department of Health and Social Services. And there are different public members and the way that the council works. So it's a large council. And
Madam Chair, yes. I don't think that my being a member of that rises the level of a conflict of interest in me voting on this, but I'd be glad.
You may declare that, but you're going to have to vote anyway. So thank you for saying it. Yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Do we have anybody online or in the room to testify for this?
No.
Senator Dyson?
Yeah, and I would only say that when I got appointed, the next meeting was pretty soon, and it was in Dillingham, and it was very expensive, you know, and it didn't work out for me to be able to go, but being able to participate this way, I would think, would be hugely valuable.
I think so. I believe this is a worthwhile change, and this bill is a House bill that's coming to us. He has what's the wishes of the committee on this bill?
I think it's a good bill.
And would I, could I get a motion to move it out of the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair. I would move that this committee refer House Bill number 349 from this committee to its next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Hear no objection, so move. So we would take a minute to sign the form, and thank you for presenting.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. Let's see where it goes. You had State Affairs over on the other side, right?
Correct.
Only?
Only.
Okay. So I guess this is the only one.
It says Finance on it.
Well, it's got a Finance on it. We are entities. This is what I want them to sign. The next bill that we have coming before us is a bill that we heard, but when we come back on record, we'll go to Senate Bill 295.
295?
Yeah.
Yes. Senate Bill 295.
Got it.
Now, who's going to present the bill for the senator?
Senator Willikowski must be on his way from Judiciary.
Oh, he's on his way? We can... Okay, we'll come back to order. We do have now in front of us 295. We did not close out public testimony. So while we're waiting on the prime sponsor, if there's anyone to testify to this bill, we could take those testimonies starting now. Is anyone signed up this year? Chris Hall is Anchorage. Are you there? Did you wish to testify?
Yes, ma'am.
You may state your name and give your testimony.
Senator Davis and members of the Health and Social Service Committee, my name is Chris Hall, and I'm the Community Relations Specialist for the ARC of Anchorage. We strongly support SB 295, and we thank you for the opportunity to testify on this important public health bill, which banned the use of PBDs, a type of chemical flame retardant added to many consumer products such as TVs, computers, mattresses, and residential furniture. The ARC of Anchorage is a private, not-for-profit organization dedicated to serving children and adults who experience developmental disabilities or mental health issues so they can lead rich, satisfying lives of dignity and purpose. We are a chapter of the ARC of the United States, a grassroots organization with more than 140,000 members who are affiliated with nearly 1,000 state and local chapters across the country. Learning and developmental disabilities influence the quality of life for affected children and their families, and also impose a heavy financial burden on the state through required special education, increased health care costs, lost time at work for parents, and lifelong loss of work productivity for severely affected children. Evidence in the scientific literature suggests that children might have higher levels of some flame-retarding chemicals than adults. Scientists recently concluded that contaminated dust, inhalation, and ingestion are likely to be additional important pathways of exposure of PBDs for children. The tendency of young children to frequently put objects in their mouth further increases their exposure to DECA-BDE. levels of PBDEs found in people are higher in the United States than any other country for where there is data available. Levels are about 10 to 100 times greater than human tissue levels in Europe. Breast milk levels are also in the U.S. are also higher than in Europe. PBD levels in tissue and breast milk appear to be doubling every 2 to 5 years in North America. We know that Alaskans are exposed to flame-retardant chemicals and carry them in their bodies. Exposing children to Octa, Penta, and Deca BDE involves potential for harm. Laboratory animals are important predictors of potential impacts to humans. Exposure to PBDEs has been associated in animal studies with problems with learning, IQ, behavior, delayed puberty, and reproductive development, thyroid, immune function, liver, and cancer. Scientific evidence has demonstrated that neurological effects occur at far lower levels of exposure. A new study conducted by researchers at Columbia University showed that prenatal exposure to PBDEs at levels commonly found in households is associated with adverse neurodevelopmental effects in children. The researchers found that children with higher concentrations of PBDEs in their umbilical cord blood at birth scored lower on tests of mental and physical development between the ages of 1 and 6. Developmental effects were particularly evident at 4 years of age, when verbal and full IQ scores were reduced 5.5 to 8 points for those with the highest prenatal exposures. I'm particularly concerned about the potential adverse health effects of PBDEs in young developing children. We have enough evidence to show that Penta, Octa, and Deca BDE and their breakdown products have the potential to cause harm. Affordable, effective alternatives are available and already in widely use. 295 is important legislation that will help protect children from needless exposures to this persistent toxic chemical. Thank you.
Thanks for your testimony. Any questions? Here or not, I'll go to Roxanne Chain.
Yes, hello. Thank you. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to tell you...
Would you state your name for the record?
My name is Roxanne Chan. Last name is C-H-A-N.
Okay.
And I'd like to tell you a little story of when I was in junior high school. One of my best memories was traveling to Europe and spending time in a Boots drugstore and spending the whole afternoon with a girlfriend picking out the exact shade of pink fingernail polish that I wanted. Now I've come to find that I was exposed to toxic chemicals in that fingernail polish without even knowing it. Or other innocent people like our children, our spouses, our friends, living their lives and being bombarded with chemicals that threaten their health and their wealth and their happiness. I'm a registered nurse. I'm an acupuncturist. I'm a practitioner of Oriental medicine. I've spent all my life avoiding chemical exposure. And yet recently, when I participated in a study sponsored by Physicians for Social Responsibility, partnering with the American Nurses Association, Healthcare Without Harm Nurses Working Group, and Clean New York, I discovered that my body is contaminated with triclosan, bisphenol A, mercury, perfluorinated compounds, phthalates, and PBDEs, of which my PBDE levels tested moderate amounts. And for some reason, beyond my understanding, I had exceptionally high levels of DEHP, a type of phthalate. So there I was in junior high school, a student, living life large, innocently celebrating a moment of glamour with a girlfriend in a little shop in Europe. My expectation naively was that someone would be looking out for me, that someone would be a guardian protecting my innocence and the innocence of my friends and my family. You, ladies and gentlemen, are those guardians. No one was for me that day, and consequently, in a thousand different ways, over a thousand different ways, my body has been the repository of dozens of chemicals that we're only beginning now to understand the consequences to our health. As a healthcare provider, I see these consequences in my patients. Every day, weekly, I ask you as our publicly elected officials to become those guardians of the innocent and enact SB 295. There are alternatives to polybrominated diphenyl ethers. I've dedicated my life to healthcare, and I find that many of my patients have suffered from issues with allergies, sensitivities, immune deficiencies, endocrine disorders, all of which can be related to chemical exposures. I'm responding to a public that has been exposed to these chemicals from past behaviors. I feel that we can reduce these health issues from the public if we reduce their incidental exposure to toxic chemicals today. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Here are no questions. I'll go to Garden Nelson.
I'm Dean of the College of Science at Florida Institute of Technology. And so my PhD is in chemistry from Yale. And over my almost 40-year career, began in General Electric Company in 1970. My last job with GE 12 years later was manager of environmental protection for GE Plastics Worldwide. Then became vice president of material science and technology for Springborne Laboratories. Moved to the University of Southern Mississippi, the Department of Polymer Science for 6 years. And since 1989, I've been the dean of the College of Science at FIT. So over the past 35 years, my research actually has been in flame retardants and in flame retardant plastics. It was the same calling from San Francisco at the American Chemical Society National Meeting, and I was the 1988 president of ACS. Let me make some comments on SB 295. I think the first thing is that Penta and Octa, BDE, and I'll just call them Penta and Octa, and then called DECA just by that shorter name, Penta and Octa haven't been manufactured since 2004. So one really doesn't need to have a bill about chemicals that aren't manufactured or used. There are three manufacturers of DECA, and they agreed in January with the United States EPA to phase out production of DECA over 3 years. So that will impact all products, not just upholstered furniture, electronics. So I think one should really let that US EPA process proceed unhindered. Now, one should understand that DECA has passed extensive risk assessment in the European Union, and so some 1,100 studies have actually been taken into account. So it's been more extensively studied than any other flame retardant or any potential alternative. The EU report was issued in May 2008 and allows its continued use. That is, after extensive risk assessment, it's believed that DECA can and should be continued to be used. Now, SB 295 only regulates mattresses or upholstered furniture and electronic products. It doesn't regulate transportation. Yet if we were truly concerned about actual human exposure to DECA, there's a number of papers that show that automobile exposure is several times that of a home or office. That is, 1 hour in an automobile is equivalent to many hours in a home or office. The bill does not deal with product end-of-life issues. That is, doesn't deal with products that are out there, doesn't deal with where they're going to go at the end of life in landfill, so forth. So that in the absence of that, these materials are actually going to be around for many decades to come. The Department of Environmental Conservation is going to have a difficult time in the task that they're being asked to do to determine whether a flame retardant is harmful or whether there are safer alternatives. An example of that is the State of Washington report, which allowed their legislation to be implemented. One of the things they do is recommend triphenylphosphate to replace DECA. Well, the first thing is that one has to change plastics. That is, triphenylphosphate isn't a flame retardant for polystyrene, which is the major use of DECA in televisions, for example. Second, TPP has been cited in the literature as an endocrine disruptor and has significant trout toxicity. So I only mention that one example in that this won't be easy. The next is the definition of flame retardant, which I find is problematic. That is, the bill says that a flame retardant means a chemical that is added to plastic, foam, or textile to inhibit flame formation. Frankly, I really don't, as a scientist, I don't quite know what that means. That is, a flame retardant can inhibit ignition, it can inhibit the propensity for ignition, it can reduce flame spread, and it can reduce other reaction to fire properties. Indeed, and from the last speaker certainly one will find in people 1 to 200 chemicals in blood at the parts per billion level. The real question is, what does that mean? What is the, is there in fact any health hazard? And so what I would say and urge is that the U.S. EPA has come to an agreement with the manufacturers of DECA. It's in fact going to be phased out for all applications over the next 3 years, and Penta and Octa aren't in fact even used or manufactured anymore. So I think that the state of Alaska would in fact be better off, given that much of its concerns have already been addressed in not passing Senate Bill 295.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there any questions? Senator Pasvan?
Yes. Dr. Nelson, is it the January 2010 phase-out agreement as to DECA, was that in part based upon a safety consideration?
There had been concerns, and rather to continue to, if you will, debate and argue about it, given the risk assessment in Europe. I think the answer to your question is the risk assessment in Europe, which is says the material is safe to be used. There are, however, these companies make 50 or more different flame retardants. Are there alternatives? Over time, the answer is yes, some for some applications with more difficulty than others, and certainly with some cost penalty, basically a 2x difference in cost in many cases. So that I think what one finds, if you've been involved in manufacturing your products, certainly I was in the days of GE, that if there are any issues, what's the manufacturer going to do? They make their product, not the materials that constitute the product. So they will switch out, as for example, happened with bisphenol A plastics used for baby bottles. You can't buy one of those anymore. So that's kind of the situation.
Further question?
Yes, Madam Chair. And then with respect to the Penta and Octa, do you agree that this bill would allow or would prohibit, I should say, products with Penta and Octa in them from being sold in Alaska, even if they were last manufactured in 2004?
So you're not going to be able to find a new product with those in it, since neither of those materials has been available for manufacturers for the last 6 years.
One final question. Was the ceasing of manufacturing of Penta and Octa in 2004 in part based upon safety considerations?
Absolutely. Those were two materials that did not pass European risk assessment. So that's the Penta and Octa and DECA are not the same. Penta and Octa did not pass European extensive risk assessment. DECA, in fact, has.
Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And thank you for your testimony. With that in mind, the previous questions asked, what is the harm then of the state of Alaska moving forward just to speed up the process of causing chemical retardants that have some ill effects on folks being banned from being used in products sold in the state of Alaska prior to their phasing out anyhow in the next couple, 3 years? What's the harm in that?
I think the harm for DECA, since it really doesn't apply to Penta and Octa, but the harm for DECA is for some applications, to get a suitable alternative is not easy. And so that's why EPA, after careful evaluation on working with the companies involved, gave the 3 years. So, I mean, one is not really going to be able to, I think, speed up that process. I think the harm is that it really is a putting into statutes something that actually does very little, and so its harm is really interfering with the U.S. EPA process.
Other question?
Just a little more on that. I understand that it's going to be phased out anyhow, and if that's the case, then I suspect that there's some thought. I shouldn't put words in the maker of the bill's mouth, but the idea that this might be a dumping ground then, as people rush to get their exodus from use of this particular material. And it would also seem to me that if in fact it's to be phased out, usually a time frame helps people, and the state of Alaska, I don't think it would have a terrific impact on this going forward anyhow. Do you agree or disagree that the small population of Alaska would have a huge impact on speeding up things a bit?
I think that's why what, as I kind of alluded to before, is that what Alaska does isn't going to have the effect of speeding up the process. What it will do is mean that Alaska might not have some products available that it might otherwise have. I think what one needs to understand about flame retardants is that what we buy in a plastic or in a material is its functionality. So in many times, actually, the placement of a flame retardant actually interferes with the mechanical properties, thermal properties, so forth of that material. So that's why these aren't one-for-one replacements. If one, for example, as in the state of Washington, were to use triphenylphosphate, have to change plastic, which means you have to redesign the product. That is the end electronic product. One of the interesting things in this whole controversy has been that mentioning computers. Well, actually, DECA, which is used in polystyrene, isn't used in computers. Very few parts for computers actually were flame retardant with DECA, because computers are more expensive products and they need actually higher performing plastics. So where DECA was the prime material and actually used since the early 1970s, that it was used in television. And I actually, the first full-scale fire tests that I ever did were in the early 1970s with DECA and polystyrene, because the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission had declared televisions to be of unreasonable risk. That is, 200 people were dying every year from TV fires in the United States. When the industry went to the flame retardant polystyrene containing DECA, which started in 1975, basically, television fire deaths in the U.S. went pretty much to nothing.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Dyson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your testimony, sir. I think I have three questions, but it would seem to me that the issue with small children's clothing, it's easier to draw the cause and effect relationship with than some component in a car or some piece of furniture. Am I thinking right?
Yeah, I mean, but the thing is that the materials we're talking about aren't used in clothing.
Yeah. Second, what are the components in an automobile that you talked about earlier that are apparently so much more dangerous than these other applications?
I guess I wouldn't say dangerous, but they certainly have high levels of flame retardant in the plastics in the interior and the upholstery in the interior. And because you have a smaller environment, a much more closed environment, and since I do live in Florida, where you have high heat, particularly in the summertime, you have a much higher, more closed environment, and so the actual human exposure is much higher.
Yeah, and thank you. And we'd welcome you to move here where it'd be much less dangerous for you. I assume that it's quite difficult to diagnose a person who has high levels of one of these contaminants. Pretty difficult to diagnose where they got it from or the source of it. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. Also, what's true and important is, in fact, several years ago, a number of members of the European Parliament were tested for 103 chemicals, and they pretty much found them all. So one of the difficulties is the attribution of one finds at the parts per billion level X chemical in my blood. What of all of the things there is doing it, or is it in fact the combination? And what combination?
Yeah.
I personally had an issue a couple of years ago with arsenic. And my blood was, I had near toxic levels of blood arsenic. And luckily my physician, who's a former Air Force physician and actually a good scientist, knows that in our part of Florida we have arsenic in the water. But then he asked, well, do you drink wine? Well, yes. Arsenicals are the fungicide on grapes. Do you eat grapes? Well, yes. The same thing. So what did I do? I now drink bottled water. I don't eat grapes, and I still drink wine.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I perhaps wasn't listening as carefully as I should have, but someone who testified earlier seemed to attribute the contemporary levels of contamination and or health problems from fingernail polish or something that she used some significant time ago. I would guess that it's difficult to draw that specific kinds of cause and effect relationship, is it not?
Absolutely correct.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Yes. Senator Passman has a question for you also.
Dr. Nelson. I assume that you do private consulting separate and apart from your position as Dean of the College of Science. And if so, are you paid for today's testimony under a private consulting contract? And if so, by whom?
I was asked to make this call today by the Citizens for Fire Safety. And I will be paid for the time that I'm involved by them. What the testimony I've given, however, is mine and mine alone, and I have not reviewed my comments in any way with them.
All right, thank you. Any other questions? There are no questions. Thank you for your testimony.
Very good, thank you.
Okay, Peter Thurn. Peter?
Thury? Yes.
You want to just repeat your name and who you represent?
Oh, yeah, my name is Peter Thury. I'm just a voter from the Mat-Su Valley, and I'm a part-time EMT volunteer. And I was listening last week and been following the bill issue and heard a doctor on. I was trying to call in, didn't call in soon enough. Heard a doctor on last week from Washington State, from a burn center who was against the bill. And so I did some of my own research on the computer and noticed that there's some other burn centers that are against these kinds of bills and done some more research on Google about the issue and caught an organization called Flicker of Hope, which is a nonprofit out of Virginia that helps burn victims, and they're against these types of bills too. And found out there were only four states that have passed this kind of legislation because of just not having a safe alternative to what we're using now. And I've seen the effects of fire burn victims, and I just wanted to call in as a private voter. who's paying attention to this issue for the committee to take the time out to, like I think you've been doing with the doctor, finding out more information, and I think the more you find out, the more you'll see that this bill should be held over if it can. And that's all I wanted to say.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? There are no questions. Anna Gottdum? Anna?
Hi. In Fairbanks, my name is Anna Gottdum.
Would you repeat your name and who you represent?
My name is Anna Gottdum, A-N-N-A, Gottdum, G-O-D-D-U-H-N, okay. And I'm a student at UAF. I'm just an individual. But I am very grateful for the opportunity to speak to this bill. I do have strong support for it. I have some prepared comments, but don't recognize the comments that have just been made, and I'd like to speak to those too. But I'm going to read my written comments first. I've been studying environmental toxicology for several years. The more I learn, the more disturbed I am by the lack of precaution in chemicals management. The phrase sound science is often used to imply that research should provide conclusive proof, which is demanded before regulation becomes acceptable. But environmental science can never provide proof, no matter how real a problem is. The scientific method is brilliant in the laboratory, but out of the lab, experimental control is not possible. Observational data are generally confounded, and science has unavoidable limitations. There will always be uncertainty, but there is no lack of significance. Many implications of the toxicological research that not the most recent caller, but I think it was Chris Hall, spoke of tremendous piles of research that have been done on the toxicity of these kinds of compounds. And the implications can be incorporated into policy with one very simple rule. If it's toxic to mice and it accumulates in human blood and fat, don't allow people to be widely exposed to it. I'd like to take a moment to quote one of my online students, a young Canadian woman who wrote about these kinds of issues. On the Faroe Islands, they have pilot whales for local consumption. 10 or so years ago, scientists surveyed the mothers of newborn babies on how much whale meat they ate while pregnant and did some tests on the babies. A few years later, when the children were older, they came back, did more tests on them, and found correlation between the amount of whale meat eaten by the mothers and some neurological behaviors like reduced attention span among the children. They think this is a consequence of the increased contaminant load to the children by the whale meat. I also know Inuit women in North America and Greenland are advised to eat only young seals or no seals at all if they are pregnant or are planning to become pregnant to avoid negative effects to their babies. It's very interesting that such arguing and lagging in banning these poisonous chemicals when they have such an impact on human health. Actually, there isn't so much argument over the chemicals that she was speaking of. In that research, PCBs and mercury have been very clearly associated with these neurological deficits in these young children. Not very clear whether or not they can recover from those deficits. But the point is that we already have more evidence than the affected individuals want regarding the toxicity of PBEs to human babies. By the time we have what would marginally qualify as proof, we will have widespread and irrevocable harm. Industry will never, ever take responsibility for the real costs of their products. Voluntarily. There's just way too much money at stake. It's your job to make sure that industrial activity is conducted with regard for subtle but severe risks to human health. I do appreciate your taking on such a complex and difficult task, and would certainly like to thank Senator Wachowski for introducing this bill. As far as some of the comments I just want to make very quickly, affirming the need for this kind of rule, I don't understand how that interferes with the EPA process at all. If we can affirm that need and accelerate the timeline of those phase outs, that would be a major victory in my mind. I don't understand how we can live with these products. We can live without them, and we have to, because they are impairing our physical fitness. They're impairing our reproductive capacity. They're impairing our mental capacity. Not these three flame retardants in particular, but the chemical load that interacts with the environment to cause these really tremendous harms. We have to stop talking about theoretical risks. It's not rhetorical anymore. These are real toxicological consequences that are happening to people, endometriosis among women, the cortisol in young boys where the hole for the urethra is not in the right place. I mean, all these kinds of weird little problems that don't kill us are increasing because of the general contaminant load that we carry with us every day. And we need to take a more precautionary approach. We need to stop allowing these things to accumulate in our blood. Thank you.
I thank you for your testimony. Any questions? Here, no question is Pamela Miller.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Would you wish to testify?
Yes, I do. Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair Davis, and all of the members of the committee this afternoon for holding this hearing about the phase-out of certain uses of toxic flame retardants for which safer and effective alternatives are in widespread and successful use. For the record, my name is Pamela Miller. I'm a biologist and the executive director of Alaska Community Action on Toxics, a statewide environmental health research organization that provides educational programs, technical assistance, and training. And we did provide testimony during the March 17th hearing and also some additional written testimony, so I would like to be brief this afternoon and just highlight a few key points. As you know, PBDEs are toxic and bioaccumulative endocrine-disrupting chemicals. They're widely used flame retardant compounds that are added to many consumer products, including mattresses, upholstery, building materials, and electronic equipment. These are not chemically bound to these consumer products and thus can be released into the environment, including the indoor air environment. And people are exposed through dietary ingestion and also through inhalation of dust containing PBDEs. I would also like to emphasize the importance of the recent Columbia University study that was mentioned by Chris of the Ark of Anchorage. According to this new study, which I think is very compelling and very significant for us today, it was published in the peer-reviewed journal Environmental Health Perspectives, and researchers at the Columbia University School of Public Health demonstrated that prenatal exposure to levels of PBDEs commonly found in our households is associated with adverse neurological and developmental effects in young children. The Columbia University researchers found that children with higher concentrations of PBDEs in their umbilical cord, blood at birth, scored lower on tests of mental and physical development between the ages of 1 and 6. These developmental effects were particularly evident at 4 years of age when verbal and full IQ scores were reduced from 5.5 to 8 points for those with the highest prenatal exposures. Frederica Pereira, one of the researchers, noted, "These findings are of concern because IQ is a predictor of future educational performance, and the observed reductions in IQ scores are in the range seen with low-level lead exposures. This research underscores the need for preventative policies now to reduce toxic exposures occurring in utero. We must take proactive measures to prevent these exposures that affect the fundamental intelligence of our developing children. This research augments the growing body of scientific evidence that links exposures to low levels of PBDEs in our environment with harm to neurodevelopment, reproduction, thyroid function, and in immune system suppression. With the availability of safer alternatives that can replace the need for persistent and bioaccumulative PBDEs, we should not allow the continuing hazards to human health. An independent and in-depth investigation by the University of Massachusetts Lowell Center for Sustainable Production, and I'd be glad to make this study available to the members of the committee, found that safer alternatives are already on the market and in widespread use. With regard to the voluntary agreement that was mentioned earlier, even though DECA is slowly being phased out through voluntary agreements and by leading companies, Alaska should not rely solely on voluntary measures and must act to protect children as well as firefighters and others who are exposed as soon as possible from this persistent, toxic, and unnecessary chemical. There is a reason that EPA entered into a voluntary agreement with these manufacturers, and that is that they recognize the serious toxicity and harm to health that these chemicals present to the public. With regard to DECA, DECA is in fact less persistent than some of the other formulations of PBDEs. However, DECA breaks down into more persistent and toxic byproducts such as Penta and Octa, and there's a lot of evidence to demonstrate that. This is a protective measure that this committee can take that I think will have long-lasting protection for public health, especially children's health and worker health. So we urge you to take action today to pass this out of committee. It's an important public health measure, and it will not compromise fire safety. And I thank you again for the time to testify today.
And we thank you for your testimony. No questions are, there is no one else signed up to testify. Is there anybody in the room that planned to testify? If not, I'm going to close public testimony at this time. The sponsor of the bill is here. Do you have any further statement that you need to make concerning the bill?
No, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Yes. Back to the committee. I think that we've given ample consideration of the bill, and it would be my intention to move the bill out of the committee to the next committee of referral. If that's acceptable, I'd accept the motion at this time.
Madam Chair, could I make a comment?
Yes.
Something that's somewhat troubling.
I'd like for you to.
Yes. We heard from Gordon Nelson today, and, you know, the first obligation in anyone that comes before this committee is to state their name and affiliation. And he did not state the affiliation that he was here representing. And I believe that it's incumbent upon every witness in this committee and every other committee in this Capitol building that the witness identify their express affiliation that they are appearing on behalf of, especially when they're paid to do that. And when someone doesn't state that, it causes me to have a high level of apprehension and mistrust for their substantive testimony. And so I just wanted that on the record.
All right, thank you. Any other comments before we move towards a motion to move the bill? Senator Dyson. Senator Dyson.
Yeah, I just say to Senator Pascavan, keep that perspective. And it's a very good question to always ask. Lots of people who testify before us will have a dog in the fight. But that doesn't mean that what they're saying isn't accurate. And as we've heard today, there's a lot of folks, I think, who have a lot of passion about it, and it may not be as well informed as we would hope. And it's always a great quest for us to get accurate information and so on. But keep asking that question. You'll have many opportunities, sir.
All right. Senator Pascavan?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would move that we, in the Senate Health and Social Services Committee, advance Senate Bill 295 from this committee to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Any objection? Hearing none, we will now move the bill out of the committee. Thank you very much. That also completes our agenda for today. We have no other bills to come before us. Thank you very much.